You're listening to KZSU Stanford at 90.1 on the FM dial. If you're not in the Bay Area, you can pick us up over the internet at kzsulive.stanford.edu. I'd like to welcome you all to Open Air tonight. My name is Michael Gray. I'm here with American Zen teacher Sherry Huber. Welcome, Sherry.
Thank you, Michael. Was that the new meditation music?
It is, in fact, our latest new meditation CD.
Uh-huh. Wonderful. Good. Thank you.
Sherry is an American Zen teacher, and she's been a Zen teacher and student for over 25 years. She's the author of more than 15 books, including that fabulous one, There Is Nothing Wrong With You. Sherry has a new website. If you'd like to check that out, please go to www.sherryhuber.com. Thanks for joining us tonight. Our topic tonight is dissatisfaction, and we have our first caller from San Francisco on the air. I'd like to welcome Sherry to our show. Hi, Sherry.
Hi.
Well, this is very confusing. There are two of us.
I know.
Two Sherrys. All right. What should we talk about tonight?
Well, Sherry, what I'd like to talk about, the whole idea of dissatisfaction is very interesting to me because I feel like I have this wonderful life and I have so many great friends and wonderful things I do, and yet I feel like so often I'm walking around with this sense of dissatisfaction.
Mm-hmm.
And what is that, and how do I get rid of it?
Well, of course, you know, well, maybe you don't know, so I'll tell you. I'm not at all a supporter of the idea of getting rid of anything, because in my experience, everything that exists in our life exists as our best opportunity to find out something about ourselves that's causing us to suffer and to let that go so that we can end suffering. So dissatisfaction, of course, I think probably brings more people to awareness practice than any other thing on the face of the earth. A lot of us, you know, can have some sort of major calamity or tragedy or trauma and sort of hang in there through it. And a lot of people kind of pride themselves on, you know, being at their best in great adversity. But it's that day-to-day nag you to death of dissatisfaction that really eventually gets to us in exactly the way that you said. You have a great life. You have so many things that you were raised to believe would make you happy as soon as you have those things. You have them, and you're still not happy. That's when people come to something like Zen practice. I've got everything I was supposed to get, and I'm still not happy. So what is going on with that? In fact, you know, the Buddha taught four noble truths, that life is suffering, there's a reason that we suffer, it's possible to end suffering, and there's a way for doing it. And I think that the better word than suffering for what he was pointing at was dissatisfaction. That's the real suffering in most people's lives. So,
that is it.
So what do you do then? How do you approach it?
Yeah. Well, it's a good question. For me, I feel like oftentimes what I end up doing is trying to talk myself out of it.
Uh-huh.
Oh, well, you shouldn't feel this way.
Right. You have so much to be grateful for.
Exactly.
If you were just grateful, then all of your problems would go away.
Yeah.
Well, to me, again, the opportunity in something like this is that first of all, you get to see all of the things that don't work. Right, which is really helpful, like trying to talk yourself out of the experience, trying to pretend that it's not going on, to deny it, to give yourself more of the same messages that you've already gotten that didn't work. But to me, the next thing that is helpful for us as a process, and it's the same process that I offer people with everything that isn't working in our lives, and that is that you can find out exactly what dissatisfaction is, how it works, and how to dismantle it, which is what makes Zen awareness practice, that is our approach. So here is this thing. It's not a mistake. It's not in your life by accident. It's the perfect thing to be going on for you to look at how you cause yourself to suffer so that you can go beyond that. And you get to focus your attention on it in such a way that you learn to dismantle it, to remove it from your life. And that process of dismantling is something that you can apply to every difficulty, problem that you encounter in life. So that would be my encouragement. Now, is the burning, screaming question in your mind, how?
You've got it.
Yeah.
How?
Okay. Now, I do want to offer one other little, you know, intellectual understanding thing about this that you may have noticed. There is nothing that makes us the center of the universe any faster than being dissatisfied. Right? So as you say, you have all of these things in your life that are wonderful, that are really great, that are, we could say, perfect, and yet you're still unhappy. You're dissatisfied, and so the focus of attention when we're dissatisfied is on us. So I walk into a situation, and I look around, and I see what I don't like about it. I meet a new group of people, and I get to see what I don't like about them. I take on a new endeavor, and I get to find out what makes me unhappy about that. And that position of dissatisfied, unhappy, suffering, miserable, don't like it, what we call something wrong mind, puts us in that place of center of the universe. When I'm not dissatisfied, when I'm living in a sense of well-being and plenty and all-rightness, I'm not really the center of the universe in the same way. I can let other people go first. You know, there's a certain generosity about that attitude of mine. So my encouragement to all of us as we approach this subject is to see exactly how we do dissatisfaction. And I would suggest that the first good place always to look is the story that's going on in our minds. That there's a constant recitation of what's wrong. We have to continue to talk to ourselves about what's wrong in order to keep our focus of attention on what's wrong. If we don't keep talking to ourselves about it, in essence creating it, we can get distracted. We can actually forget that there's something wrong. We can get involved in something, start enjoying ourselves, be happy, and then, whoop, here comes the voice again saying, yeah, but don't forget that blah, 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 or this isn't going to work, or that's not going to happen, or if you keep going this way, you're never really going to get what you want, or whatever it is. So are you familiar with those voices?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So, of course, in Zen, the thing that we offer as an alternative to those voices is the present moment, coming back to the breath. And for a lot of people, it's that's the answer. how can that be it? But, of course, if we really come back to the breath, that automatically brings us into the present moment. If all of my attention and awareness is on breathing, I have to be here. Now, what we learn very quickly to do is have our attention on the breath, and then maybe still keep a little awareness on the breath, but the attention darts right on out there and comes up with the first thing that I don't like, that isn't right, that isn't the way I want it to be, and then I'm gone. So what we do in Zen practice is continue to bring ourselves back, full attention, full awareness on the breath. And even if it's just a split second of distraction, if you will, from that litany of what's wrong, it gives us an experience of living in a world, in a reality, where that constant isn't the focus of our attention. So I come back, I breathe, I'm here, okay, is there anything wrong? Well, no. And then the voice kicks in again. I recognize it. Yes, that's a habit. Yes, I do that. I come back to the breath again. I'm right here. I'm in my body. Okay. Is there a problem? Well, no. Now, of course, the voice wants to say, well, that's nice, you're breathing, but you're not addressing these difficulties. You're not addressing these problems. So it can be very helpful for us to realize that listening to a voice continue to repeat what's wrong is not exactly solving a problem.
Oh, that's so helpful. Because really, I tend to listen to them and think, oh, they're telling me something that I need to hear.
Yeah.
I need to do something.
Yeah. When, in fact, they're telling you what you've heard over and over and over and over and over and over and over. Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. So if, in fact, this is one of the ones that I like to play with, if that voice weren't there telling me something is wrong, would I have a problem? Because what else in life is giving me information that I have a problem? It's not like people come up to me and say, you know, this is your problem. You're blah, 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 blah. I mean, on occasion they do, but not that often, right? But the voice inside our heads is telling us constantly. I mean, most people go to sleep with that voice in their head and wake up with that voice in their head.
No, I do.
Yeah. Yeah. And
are you saying that maybe it doesn't, maybe it's not true?
Which part? What the voice is telling you?
Uh-huh.
Ooh, I sure am. Yeah, which is the next step, isn't it? So the first step is to notice that there's this constant yammy, yammy, yammy about what's wrong. Okay, that's one. And then the question is, but do you mean that yammy, yammy, yammy isn't, in fact, telling me important information that I need to have? And, yeah, that is what I'm saying. That, in fact, all of the answers that you want, every answer that you've received in your life so far, I would suggest, came to you via insight. You know, you're just walking along, doing whatever you're doing, and all of a sudden you go, oh, I see. And the problem is solved. You have seen the solution. I would suggest, and, you know, hopefully we're going to keep meeting like this, all of us, so you can check this out and give me a call back at another time and let me know, that no solution that you're looking for is going to come from the voices inside your head. They present problems. They see everything as problems. They don't solve problems. There's a lot of, well, you should, well, you should, well, you should, which, you know, kind of takes us back to our parents and teachers and folks like that, and that wasn't helpful either.
Wow, it's so hard to imagine because I'm so used to going to my head to figure things out.
Yep, yep. Do you have somebody in your life who loves you unconditionally?
I do.
And does this person, I mean, would you say this person is relatively intelligent and savvy?
Yeah.
Okay. So one of the things that you might do, just pick a problem that you have, something that's been bugging you, and that's an ongoing kind of thing that these voices about over time. And just go to this person who loves you unconditionally and say, what should I do about this? And do whatever they tell you to do.
Really?
Yep. Just as an experiment. You know, Gandhi had this great way of approaching life. He did what he called experiments in truth. And he would just do things to see what happened. Because what he was trying to do, I project, we never talked about this, but what he was attempting to do was get outside of this conditioning, this same story that just plays over and over and over in our minds, the same limited perspective that we think of as reality. And so he would just do something to see what happened. So I would offer that to you. You know, we say, well, I want to know what to do. I need a solution to this problem. Well, you've listened forever to what the voices in your head say. So how about, because I would suggest those voices are not actually that fond of you, don't actually treat you as well as your friend who loves you unconditionally. So ask somebody who loves you unconditionally, what should I do about this problem? See what their answer is and see what your reaction is to the thought of following their advice. Yeah. Okay?
I'm just kind of reeling from just the idea. You know, it's just...
I can tell it sounds like fun.
Wow, well, thank you so much.
Yeah, let me know, okay?
All right, I'll be there.
Thanks, Sherry.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
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 Hi, this is Crisco Jones, and as a plea bargain to my pending bicycle theft charges, I wanted to let you know that the Stanford University Department of Public Safety and KZSU remind you that bicycle safety laws apply on campus as well as in the surrounding communities. When riding on campus at night, you're required to have a white light in front and a red reflector in back. A flashing red light in back is even better. Helmets are a good idea for everyone and are required for riders under 18. Use good common sense when parking and locking your bike. Don't lock to handicapped access ramps. Try to find a stationary object to attach your bike, such as the bike racks. The bike racks. The bike racks. The bike racks. The bike racks.
And we're back. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Open Air on KZSU Stanford. I'm here with Sherry Huber tonight, and we're talking about dissatisfaction. I'd like to welcome our next caller from St. Louis on the air. Ellen, welcome to our show.
Thank you. Hi, Sherry.
Hi, Ellen. How are you doing tonight?
I'm fine, thank you.
Good.
So I've been looking at this idea of antidepressant medication and meditation
mm-hmm.
in my life,
mm-hmm.
and I'm feeling dissatisfied about that, and I'm not really sure where to go with it.
Mm-hmm. Can you give me a little background?
Well, I've been on antidepressant medication for coming up on 10 years now.
Wow.
And I have in the last year been able to slowly decrease it.
Mm-hmm.
But I felt like I got to a level that I couldn't decrease beyond.
Mm-hmm. What happened when you got to that level?
Well, I got to a rough time, rough area.
Uh-huh.
And
did it feel circumstantial, or did it feel like it was just physiological? In other words, could you get a sense of whether you were depressed and seeing the world as difficult, or whether the world was difficult and that caused you to feel depressed?
Well, I guess I'm not clear. I think it was some of both.
Uh-huh.
I think my life was difficult, but it has been difficult. I've been going through a lot of sort of change and transition
mm-hmm.
in this last year.
Mm-hmm.
And
okay, now tell me, if you would, about meditation.
Well, and so then meditation I've been doing sort of on and off in my life, very sporadically. But I have the idea, and I guess, and I've heard that meditation is an effective way of handling depression.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been hoping that maybe through meditation I could eventually decrease my medication.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess I'm just not sure how to go about that.
Okay. Now let me ask you this. Do you take your antidepressants kind of religiously?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, then now let me make this clear, Ellen. I never give people advice.
Okay.
I say a lot of things to people that they interpret as advice, but
okay.
It never is.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So all I do is make suggestions.
Okay.
You see the difference?
Yes, I do.
Yes. Okay.
Yes.
Now this is a little tongue-in-cheek because most of what I say sounds like advice. Okay. That's why it's so important to make it clear to people that that's not what's going on.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Especially about a subject like this.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
It's very sensitive.
It is so sensitive. Okay. So my encouragement to you is this. That when your meditation practice is something that you do as religiously as you take your medications, then you can start looking at the two approaches in a somewhat equal way.
I see. Yeah,
so okay. It's kind of like, you know, people will go along and they all of a sudden they decide that they need to stop smoking cigarettes, which is, you know, nobody's going to argue with them. That's a really good idea. But that's just all they do. They just stop smoking cigarettes. Well, it's not like smoking cigarettes didn't have a big place in their lives. And you can't take something out of your life without putting something in, without having some kind of bumpy places in the road.
Right.
Yeah. So if you're going to look at getting off of antidepressants, then to me it would be really important that you make your support system, the support system that's there, so strong that you stop taking the medication because you no longer need it. You're not going to stop taking the medication and then hope that you can find something to fill in that gap.
Right.
You see?
Right. Yeah.
So something that this is my latest passion in life, and it's another suggestion. There's a book called The Mind and the Brain by a fellow named Dr. Jeffrey Schwartz. And I wish everyone in the world who has an interest in this subject would read it. He's a psychiatrist who's done most of his work with people who have obsessive-compulsive disorder.
Oh, yeah.
And he thought that that would be a perfect illness or condition to practice awareness practice with. And so what he has proved through his research is that the focus of attention actually changes the brain. And which, of course, is what we've thought through Zen practice for a very long time. It's what the Buddha taught, so it's not just Zen practice.
Right.
But now science has found a way to talk about that and to do the kind of research they need to do to make it official.
Right.
And you might really enjoy reading it because he gives very specific, until our new book comes out in May on acceptance, which has a lot of the same kinds of step-by-step approaches to this, he gives some really good solid ways to focus the attention in ways that will help you restructure these habit patterns of depression.
Uh-huh. Wow.
Yeah.
That's
good stuff.
That's fascinating.
Yeah. So that's my best encouragement. Go out there and go on a program of doing so much to take care of yourself. So you're going to find all sorts of social network support systems. You're going to be doing everything for yourself in terms of exercise and diet and getting enough rest and meditation and all of those kinds of things. And the medication eventually perhaps will become superfluous. Let me know, huh?
Yeah,
okay.
I will.
Good. Thank you, Ellen.
Thank you so much. Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Does your child have trouble rhyming? Or maybe he has a problem connecting letters to their sounds? These may be signs of a learning disability, but don't worry. There's nothing wrong with your child. He just processes words and information differently than others. Early detection and the right help, most kids with a learning disability go on to do well in school. To find out what you can do to help your child, the Coordinated Campaign for Learning Disabilities urges you to call 1-888-478-MIND. That's 1-888-478-MIND.
Welcome back. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Open Air on KZSU Stanford. My name is Michael Gray, and I'm here tonight with Sherry Huber, and we're talking about dissatisfaction. Our next caller is on the line from San Diego. Sandy, welcome to the air.
Sherry.
Sandy, are you there?
I'm there.
Good evening.
Good evening. Well, what I'm thinking about, and
show up at almost any time and takes me to places of anger and fear and dark corners. But it seems to me, too, that at other times it's a great motivator and it helps me to want to change things. I think it motivates me to do good things like volunteer and donate, work with others.
So, if I'm hearing you right, kind of on a dualistic level, if we looked at it that way, there's the one that you pointed out that I think is so helpful for us to consider, that there's the dissatisfaction that leads us to things like anger and fear. There's that one. I'm dissatisfied with this. It's somebody else's fault. I'm a victim to this. I don't know what's going to happen. I feel out of control. And then what you're pointing at is on the other side of that continuum would be a dissatisfaction that causes you to want to address things that seem in need of addressing. Yeah. So I'm wondering if, in fact, that experience is dissatisfaction over there on that I would like to change this. Now, I agree with you that much of social activism and that sort of thing comes out of a place of dissatisfaction and, in fact, out of places of anger and fear and victimization and those kinds of things. But I wonder, when I look inside at myself, it doesn't seem to me that I need to be dissatisfied with something to want it to be different. So I can, if in fact, when I look at it, something, you know, the kind of thing that goes on around the holidays, you know, people, suddenly there's a lot of attention on people who are hungry. I must say I kind of shake my head in wonder that there are 2 days of the year that we want people to eat, Thanksgiving and Christmas. The rest of the time, you know, they're really on their own. But a lot of, you know, gathering presents for families and this sort of thing. And so a lot of that kind of social behavior can be motivated by there's something wrong here, and we need to address this something that's wrong. But I know for myself, that kind of focus doesn't actually lead me very often to any kind of behavior that I would consider positive. What it usually leads me to is pointing the finger and blaming and trying to figure out who did it wrong and how it should be different. But the kind of thing that motivates me to want to contribute to somebody's life or participate in a certain activity is when my heart feels open, when I actually feel gratitude and want to share, when I feel compassion for how difficult life is for most of us and want to participate more with people. So I don't know what you see when you look at that, whether that fits at all with your life experience. And I'm not sure what we would call that one that I just described.
Yeah, open-hearted, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. And that it's not a dissatisfied. In fact, it's quite the opposite. It's a, you know, it's a place of, I have enough. I don't have everything, certainly. Who has ever had everything they want? Especially, you know, if we're looking at it from a conditioned self kind of place, but that feeling of I have so much, and I want to share.
Yeah, I think maybe I can family together.
Uh-huh.
That, you know, people shouldn't be hungry in the world, and I label it as that, but I think I act out of that.
Uh-huh.
Right.
Might be interesting just to kind of see what the, if you can think of it this way, the sort of the quality of your heart response is in those situations. You know, when you want everybody to eat, Is it that there's something wrong in the world, or is it just that you really care and you want people, you want people to have the same kinds of things that you enjoy? That we want everybody to have those kinds of things. I think that's what inspires us about Thanksgiving and Christmas. You know, it's whether it truly is as happy a time for us as we would like it to be. There's that feeling about it, that there's family and there's plenty and there's giving, and we just want everybody to participate in and have that kind of given to feeling.
Yeah, because I have so much I can
have it all. Yeah, yeah.
Good point.
Interesting. Well, once again, look and see and let us know, huh?
Okay.
All right. Thank you, Sandy.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Did you know that more people suffer from Parkinson's disease than multiple sclerosis, muscular dystrophy, and Lou Gehrig's disease combined? Did you know that Parkinson's disease affects not only the elderly, but even people in their 30s and 40s, and this figure is growing at an alarming rate? There is no cure, but there is hope. The American Parkinson's Disease Association works to ease the burden and find the cure through medical research, patient and family support, and education. If you or someone close to you has Parkinson's and needs help or information, please call the American Parkinson's Disease Association at 1-800-908-2732. That's 1-800-908-2732.
Welcome back. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Open Air on KZSU Stanford. We're here with Sherry Huber tonight, and we're talking about dissatisfaction. Please stay with us after the show. We'll have the Palo Alto City Council meeting on right after this show, and then later in the evening, Smitty. We have our next caller joining us from North Carolina this evening, and I'd like to welcome Jan to our show. Hi, Jan.
Hi, Michael.
Good evening.
Hello.
How are you this evening?
I'm doing great, thank you.
Wonderful. Is it late where you are?
It's later than it is there.
Oh, very good.
Not too bad yet.
Oh, good. What have you been looking at on this fascinating subject of dissatisfaction?
Well, the thing I wanted to ask about was I have noticed that my focus of dissatisfaction will shift from, you know, for a while I'll be dissatisfied with my work.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, that'll seem to go on for some months, and I'll think I'm working on that, and then I'll feel like I have that resolved, and then all of a sudden I'm dissatisfied with my relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm dissatisfied with myself. But just starting to catch on that it seems to move around from place to place, and I'm just wondering what you would say about that.
Well, I've noticed the same thing, and when I talk with people, it seems to be the way it goes. In fact, the cycle that I've noticed is work, relationship, abode. So I'm dissatisfied with what I do. Should I get another job? Should I blah, 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 blah. I'm dissatisfied with my relationship. Then I'm dissatisfied with where I live. You know, should we stay in this house? Should we get another house? Maybe we should move to another city. That's what people do. They take another job in another city, and then they need to get a new relationship. So there's constant dissatisfaction and constantly seeking something new, which seems to go rather nicely together, because there's the dissatisfaction that, once again, when I look at it, it keeps me at the center of the universe. So those kinds of things we were talking about with the last caller, I don't really need to worry too much about what's going on in the world or in anybody else's life, because look at the problems that I have. I mean, this is what's wrong with my relationship. This is what's wrong with my job. And it just consumes all of our kind of life force and mental capacity. And And at the same time, I'm looking for something new. So there's, with new, very often, there's that kind of excitement or, you know, it hasn't settled in yet to reflect me in that same old mirror that I get so tired of looking in. So with relationship, any of them, they're all wonderful for, I don't really have to be the same old me for a period of time. You know, I'm with a new person, and it's fun, and it's exciting, and I get to tell my stories again, and I get to be romantic and charming and, you know, all of those ways that I truly am. And then it settles into a relationship, and suddenly I'm not so fascinating, I'm not that interesting, I've bored myself. And instead of taking that opportunity to say, now, wait a minute, how am I accomplishing this? It's much easier and much more appealing to just go find a new person.
Yeah, well, and that seems true that at the beginning of the switch to the next subject, you know, I like to solve problems, so it feels fun at the beginning.
Uh-huh.
And then after a while, you know, it doesn't feel fun anymore, but I seem to quickly get hooked into the fun of the next dissatisfaction.
Yeah.
We're calling it that.
Yeah, yeah. So I sort of stay balanced on that fine line between isn't this terrible because there are all of these things that I'm deciding, you know, all these things that aren't working, but it's really exciting because there are problems to be solved, and I could do this or that, I could go there, I could be that person, I could. So, again, you know, I usually get to talk to people when that the thrill of that has worn off, which often happens to people in about the middle 40s. And it's just not that exciting any longer to go through what I know is a very predictable series of steps that are going to lead me back to the same place. That's when we get interested in, how is this happening? So my favorite way of looking at this is that you know, if I'm listening to music, so I talk about this in two ways. One, I want to really hear the music so I can turn it up really loud, and or I can turn it down and listen really attentively. If I want to listen to music, I can just put in, you know, 150,000 CDs and just go from CD to CD to CD, okay, just as fast as I can. Or if I really want to listen to music, I can just put any music in and really attend to it until I have the experience of listening to music. And I think that's the one that is so difficult for us as, you know, what I talk about as egocentrically, karmically conditioned humans. You know, what reflects me in the way that I like to be reflected is something new, something new, something new, something new. And that what doesn't reflect me the way I want to be reflected is being in the same place, just being me for extended periods of time, which is why meditation isn't more popular. Yeah, so once again, perhaps to take on the challenge of, what is that process that I do? You know, really, instead of getting caught up in the content of that, the what my job is now and how I'm going to make it different, or what my relationship is now and how I'm going to fix and change that, instead of getting caught in the content of that, to watch the process of that, to watch how that dissatisfaction begins to grow, because you've identified, okay, now the relationship is kind of leveled out, so now it's time to focus on redoing the house or considering moving to another city. So to watch that progress as you go from having resolved something or having something kind of handled to now what's the next thing that's not working that I want to turn my attention to, and then the, you know, in your case, kind of the thrill of solving the problem and then having that get to a steady place and then looking for the next, you know, to chart that out. And it might take a while. You know, you might do it on a weekly basis. You might do it on a monthly basis. It might take you a whole year to really watch how you move through that. But I think it would be very enlightening.
What do you think eventually, you know, turns me or a person to the next thing? Or how would you recommend going about learning more about that?
Well, I think that, and again, this is one of those where I hope you'll, you know, take this on as a challenge and then report back what you find out. I think what happens to us is that we get to a place where we're right on the edge of seeing something about ourselves that is going to be threatening to our self-image, which often happens to us when we stay in a situation past the time of that, you know, that when the foot starts tapping and the fingers start drumming, and that's, you know, it's like, okay, it's time to move on to the next thing. If we stay there, we're going to start seeing things about ourselves that we have been avoiding seeing. Now, for somebody like me, that's the place where things get really interesting, because those are the places where we suffer. And it's not that we don't suffer as long as we're not looking at them. We are suffering as long as we don't look at them. So I'm constantly trying to stay one step ahead of the underlying motivation in my life. So, for instance, if I can keep moving, keep things up there, you know, keep all the plates spinning, I don't have to deal with my anxiety. You know, or I don't have to face the fact that I'm really insecure. If I can keep busy in all of these directions, I don't have to face that what's driving me is a fear of being alone.
I get a little tightness just listening to you say that.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so, you know, the thing for all of us to consider, I think, as we look at this sort of thing, is it's not a contest. You know, it's not a, okay, let's find our weak spots and then just go after them ruthlessly. What I'm describing here, I hope, people will take on as a very gentle process of introspection. So there are the places that I've run from. Now I'm just going to stay a little bit longer in that spot and just kind of get a sense of what's there. And if I need to run, I'll run. And then I'll come back to it and just kind of look around there in that place that I haven't wanted to tarry. And, you know, if it gets really uncomfortable, I'll get out of there. So a gentle approach of paying attention and being willing to see what we haven't been willing to see. That's where awareness lives. That's where enlightenment lives.
Well, I appreciate it.
Good. So you're gonna take this on for us?
Good.
We get enough of these out there, you know, we'll get a whole crew of people working on our mutual enlightenment. It'll be very, very effective. All right. Thank you, Jan.
Thank you, Sherry.
Good night.
Good night.
If you could use a little more love in your life, why not adopt a stray cat or dog from Pets in Need? The first no-kill adoption shelter to serve the peninsula and Silicon Valley, Pets in Need has a wide array of pets that would like to be part of your family, all of whom come complete with unconditional love. For more information, please call 650-367-1405. That number again, 650-367-1405. Or visit them on the web at www.petsinneed.org.
And we're back. You're listening to Open Air on KZSU Stanford. I'm here with Sherry Huber tonight, and we've been talking about dissatisfaction. We have another caller way over on the other side of the country. I'd like to welcome Becky from Pittsburgh. You're on the air.
Hi.
Good evening, Becky.
Good evening, Sherry. I've been listening, and I've really heard some amazing things.
Good.
What I came to be thinking about as I was listening to you talk to the other women was I did start meditating about 8 years ago, and I've gotten to the point with my practice where I do it on a daily basis. And I'm lucky enough to have been able to structure my life in a way that is really works for me. I have a lot of time during the day where I'm alone, and I can meditate, and I can walk, and I work from home. So I'm really, really lucky in that respect.
Mm-hmm.
And so the dissatisfaction for me anymore doesn't rear its ugly head until I go into somebody else's house. Or I get together with old friends, and then I start to notice that, well, their house is so much more nicely decorated than mine, and she and her husband have a really, God, I don't have that kind of relationship with my husband.
Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, it's that whole thing of comparing.
Yeah. Oh, it's brutal, isn't it?
Oh, it's just brutal.
Mm-hmm.
And it really affects my friendships.
Because
I've got people that I don't even want to be around.
Yeah, yeah. And, of course, they have no idea, right?
Right.
Although we can project, and probably pretty accurately, that they're doing the same process you're doing.
Maybe they are.
Yeah, because that's what we do with people. You know, we look at people, and we find out one of two things. If we can get these both in one person, then it's a real coup.
Uh-huh.
But we look at them and we pick the one thing that they do better than we do.
Right.
And then we feel bad.
Right.
And then maybe the next person, maybe again, if we get lucky, we can do it the same. We find the thing that they don't do as well as we do.
Exactly.
And then we can feel superior. And there we go through the day. I feel better, I feel worse. I feel better, I feel worse. I feel better, I feel worse. Yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, again, the net result is I get to be the center of the universe.
Okay, right.
Yeah. Because, you know, now, this is one of those things that's dangerously close to something unfortunate. So what I'm not saying to you is you need to take every moment as an opportunity to feel grateful. Okay.
Okay, you're not saying that?
I'm not saying that. As the woman said to me, you know, sometimes I get so sick and tired of being grateful. Yeah, so it's not that. However, it is actually possible for us to be happy that people are doing well.
Right.
We can do that.
Yeah, not happy that people are doing well. It's just that, and I even know the concept of somebody has to be walking around in the Becky spaces. I mean, somebody has to be living on this little block, in this little cul-de-sac in Pittsburgh, seeing the world from these eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And
you got the job.
And I got the job.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, if all our houses look the same and we all have the same
husband. It would get really...
It would be very boring.
Yeah.
And I have hours to contemplate that, and I still walk into the trap every time. And I remember what you were saying to Sherry in the beginning of the hour about coming back to the breath.
Mm-hmm.
I have a feeling that might help somebody do it.
Well, the other thing, since you're so aware of this, it seems to me that another good technique might be to go into these situations looking for this. Instead of walking into the situation and then letting it blindside you, go in with the expectation that part of your conditioning, because that's what it is, right? That what you're describing is the mechanism that keeps us in suffering, right? So no matter how you started out, you have a great life, a life that you have set up from what you've said. And so how, with all of that, can you continue to suffer?
Exactly.
Well, this is the way we do it. So you constantly find places where you don't measure up.
Right.
Yeah. And then you can suffer in spite of all of the wonderful things that are going on. So if you realize that as a process, you can go into these situations. So I'm going to go see my friend today. And I'm watching for when the voice kicks in. Now, if you can do that, the thing that you can know is you're not going to be able to believe it for very long. The reason that you believe it is that the voice kicks in and is talking to a part of you who believes what that voice says.
Right.
Yeah? So it's a one down part of you. Right? So this is the kind of place it would be for me. It's the awkward, socially inept, unattractive teenager. Okay?
Exactly.
Yeah. And so that I walk into this place and I'm not paying attention. And so the voice kicks in and it's talking to that part of myself. And of course, I immediately feel like garbage.
Right, but I haven't even been there at all. It's like there's two little kids behind my back talking.
Yes. Exactly. So that seems to be job one, right? For
right.
you to get there. So that when you walk in, first of all, you say, okay, now I know I'm going to time it. I'll bet you within 5 minutes of walking in this house, I'm going to hear a voice start comparing my life to her life, and I'm going to come out on the unfavorable end of it. Okay? So now I'm watching my watch, and I'm listening for the voice. So that I don't let those two folks start this conversation that are going to ruin my life. When it starts, what I remind myself of, first of all, I can say to that that insecure part of myself, you know, you don't have to believe this. You don't have to take it on. You're a great person with a great life. And I can look at that voice that's talking to me, that's setting up this, this scene for me that I know is not true of my life, say, you know, it's just not true. That's just not so. That's not what's going on. Then you bring your attention back to the breath, and you get here. And there you are, and you're in the house, and you're with your friend, and you're present, and you're breathing, and then you'll watch it all start up again, right? Because it's a campaign. It's a campaign to keep you in suffering.
Right.
Yeah.
And so it's really just a matter of awareness.
Yeah. It's as you said, you've got to be there. When you're not present in your life, all this conditioned stuff is going to happen. When you are present in your life, you get to call the shots. You get to say what's true and what's not true. If you're not there, they get to say.
Right.
So it's really the amount of suffering that they can inflict on us when we are absent from our lives. It really will inspire us to be more present.
Yeah, that's going to be a really fun thing to try.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So make out a little chart. You know, I'm going here. Okay, now what usually comes up around her place or her marriage or her whatever? And so watch it. Make a game out of it. And in fact, that's going to be the fun and challenging part for you is making a game out of this. If you go unconscious and think, oh, I'm just going to go to a party. I don't want to have to pay attention. Well, then suffering is on the horizon. Yeah. And, you know, the thing that we know as soon as we start practicing this is that paying attention just makes life better. It's not like I'm going to have more fun if I go unconscious.
Right.
You know, suffering, that conditioned suffering would have me believe that. Oh, you've worked so hard. You have to be present all the time. I mean, can't you just relax and let your hair down? And no, you can't. And, in fact, it's not more fun because in that unconsciousness, all these voices of suffering have access to you.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, I don't want to start a whole new topic, but it seems easy to be present when I'm alone.
Yes.
And then as soon as another person
yes.
walks within my sphere,
yes.
I get confused or I get,
yes.
get distracted.
Yes. Yes. I don't know of a single human being who doesn't have that experience. And so that becomes the practice, right? So I'm doing it when I'm alone. Oh, this is great. And then somebody else comes in the house. They're not even in the room with me. They're not looking at me. They're not talking to me. And I still lose focus. Yeah. And so, okay, well, this is where the practice is. Again, it's not a contest. You know, when the voice kicks in and says, well, you can't even pay attention when there's... That's not... No, that's
right.
What we talk about as self-hatred. It has nothing to do with awareness and enlightenment and paying attention in a way that's going to end suffering.
Okay.
Good.
Thank you so much.
Thank
Lisa.
You.
It's been a great hour listening to you.
Wonderful.
Okay.
Let's do it again.
Okay.
Thanks, Becky.
Mm-hmm. Bye.
Bye.
We've come to the end of our hour.
Well, it's just flown by, hasn't it?
I don't know where it went.
Yeah. Let's do it again.
Should we do it again?
Yeah, next week.
How about next week?
All right.
I'd like to thank all of you for joining us tonight. I'd like to thank Sherry for being here with us.
My pleasure.
In case you weren't here at the beginning of the hour, Sherry has a new website. You can check it out at www.sherryhuber.com. That's spelled C-H-E-R-I-H-U-B-E-R.com. I'd like to thank our listeners, both locally here in the Bay Area and those who are picking us up over the Internet, wherever you are in the world. I'd like to thank Bill for helping us with the engineering. Lori on the phones, many thanks. And all the folks at KZSU who have helped me to get this show on the air. Thanks a lot. We're going to be on the air again next Monday at 5 p.m. Pacific time. That's Monday, December 23rd, and our topic is coming home for the holidays. In the new year, we'll be on again Thursday, January 9th at 5 p.m. Pacific time. If you have any questions about this show or you'd like to be a caller on a future show, please go ahead and email me. You can reach me at M as in Michael, Gray, G-R-A-Y, at KZSU.org. Coming up next is the Palo Alto City Council meeting, and then after that, Smitty. Please stay tuned.